This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report podcast, and today is March the 20th, 2024. It has been 3,705 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 29 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 26 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Tuesday and Wednesday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. We start, as we always do, with the daily assessment. There are only small changes from yesterday. If you skip ahead, it won't hurt my feelings. I won't even know. 1. The preordained election of Vladimir Putin has cemented his rule for life as a de facto dictator, and he will continue to dismantle 70 years of political and social reform from the Soviet and post-Soviet eras. 2. Free Russian Liberation Forces have established operational goals in Belgorod and plan to carry out attacks beyond reconnaissance in force and harassment attacks. 3. Ukraine is systematically targeting Russia's oil refining capability to cause economic harm and degrade Russian mobility. 4. The United States House of Representatives will not advance a bill that will provide additional financial and military aid to Ukraine, unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections. 5. The inability of congressional leaders to agree on additional support for Ukraine is worsening European instability. It will ultimately encourage further acts of aggression by the Putin regime within and beyond Ukraine. 6. Based on statements made by Russian President Vladimir Putin and his proxies, and the actions and inactions of Ukraine's allies, the world remains in the early stages of the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 7. Ukraine's air defense capabilities will be in a critical state by April due to a lack of munitions. 8. Russia maintains the initiative theater-wide, but the second phase of the 2024 winter offensive is reaching its culmination point. 9. Ukraine's shift to a Fabian strategy to wear down Russian combat power has been effective. 10. Russia has significantly improved its intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities, ISR, and fire control, enabling more successful attacks against mobile targets. 11. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 12. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. There has been a sharp decline in Russian attacks, fire missions, and airstrikes in the Kupiansk area of operation, or AO, since Free Russian Liberation Forces started their attacks in Bryansk, Kursk, and Belgorod 11 days ago. Poor weather conditions over the last 24 hours likely contributed to the reduction in fighting. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, GSAFU, reported continued fighting in the area of Sinkivka, with no change in the situation. In the Kremenayo of Luhansk Oblast, the same decline in the number and intensity of Russian attacks has been noted. Russian forces restarted their attacks east of Terny, suffered losses, and retreated to their defensive positions. In the Siverskoye, Russian forces renewed their attempts to advance into Bilohorivka without success. Here's what's happening in the Donbas. Starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast in the Bakhmutyo, there were no reports of significant fighting, but fighting almost certainly continued in Ivanivske. In the Klishivkayo, a squad or platoon-sized Russian sabotage and reconnaissance unit broke through Ukrainian defense lines and was eliminated east of Pretechene district. Fighting continued north and east of Klishivka, with no change in the situation. Russian forces tried to break through Ukrainian defense near Kurdyumivka and failed to advance in the direction of Bilohora. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces continued their operational pause in the Avdiivka AO, carrying out 11 of the 67 Russian-initiated attacks. Fighting continued on a line from Berdyche to Semenivka to the western part of Orlivka, ending at Tonenke. The Russian Ministry of Defense, Armod, claimed that Orlivka had been captured, which was disputed by multiple sources. This is the third capture claim by Moscow in less than a month. Further south, fighting continued in Prvomayske and the southern outskirts of Nevelske. Selidove was hit by several Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for a ground attack, wounding four people, including three pensioners. The heaviest fighting continues to be in the Vuhledar AO, where 22 of the 67 Russian-initiated ground attacks were carried out. Fighting continued east and northeast of Krasnohorivka and east of Georgievka, with no change in the situation. Russia continued its attacks in Novomikhailivka without success. Russian forces repeated their attempts to advance from Solotke in the direction of Vodyane, suffered losses, and retreated. In the Staromlinivka AO, Russian and Ukrainian sources reported fighting in the areas of Staromayorske and Dorozhayne, with no change in the situation. During the day-to-day, Polish farmers plan to block transit across Poland by protesting at 580 different locations, including the main roads that lead to Warsaw. This is in addition to the ongoing blockades on the Ukrainian and German borders. Reportedly, 70,000 plan to participate, with some locations closed for only a few hours and others blocked for the entire day. The action is being done against the European Union's Green Deal environmental regulations, which are extremely unpopular with European farmers. Additionally, protesters want all agricultural productions from non-EU European nations boycotted, specifically Ukraine and Moldova. We maintain our assessment that pro-Russian elements are using these protests for political gain and to hurt Ukraine economically. The Pentagon confirmed that a United States MQ-9 Reaper drone made an emergency landing near the town of Mirosławiec in northeastern Poland. Newsweek was told the Reaper was conducting routine training operations when it lost connection with the command station, affecting their ability to operate the aircraft. No additional information was provided, and it is unclear if a technical issue or electronic warfare caused the signal loss. Fighting between pro-Putin and free Russian forces continued along the border of Ukraine. In the Saratov region, Ukrainian drones attacked Engels military airfield. Air raid sirens and small arms fire could be heard, and security cameras recorded two large explosions. Russian officials report two drones were shot down, and later increased the number to five. Local residents reported hearing five explosions and claimed that the base was hit at least once. One of the security videos that captured the sound of gunfire and explosions was less than 2 kilometers from the main runway. In the Sumy Oblast of Ukraine, military and administrative regional governor Volodymyr Artyuk said there was, quote, no risk of a breach of the Ukrainian border. And the biggest danger is, quote, air and missile strikes, which have become much more intense on the local infrastructure. Evacuations continued, with 22 settlements and villages emptied and now under military control. Efforts to restore TV and radio transmissions continued, with repairs completed in Sumy, Trostianets, and Shostka. In Bilopilla, Russian forces targeted critical civilian infrastructure, knocking out water service to part of the settlement. Another civilian was killed in Velika Pisarivka, where the VKS, Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed the settlement for the fourth day in a row. Ukrainian military analyst Oleksandr Kovalenko estimated that Russia has 17,500 troops in the Belgorod region, supported by 100 tanks, 350 armored vehicles, 450 artillery pieces, and approximately 50 multiple launch rocket systems. Both Kursk and Bryansk have approximately 8,000 troops supported by 40 tanks, 110 armored vehicles, 165 artillery pieces, and 10 multiple launch rocket systems. The under-equipped units, which include conscripts, are spread thin, defending 750 kilometers of border. Russian state media agency Channel One was forced to turn off all comments on their VK page, a Russian Facebook clone. The page was full of comments from the Belgorod region, such as, quote, "Show Belgorod, which is being wiped off the face of the earth, and the authorities are inactive," and, quote, "They don't care about us, about what's happening in Belgorod." The Romanian battle group Jetica has joined the Free Russian Liberation Forces, becoming the fifth military group to attack pro-Putin forces within Russia. Quote, "There is a clear motivation for these incursions at the operational level of Ukraine's objectives, which obviously I will not make public here." Unquote. Here is what we could verify in Bryansk, Kursk, and Belgorod. Starting in the Kursk region, Free Russia Liberation Forces continued to set conditions in Tyotkina for future ground attacks by conducting shelling of pro-Putin forces. Sporadic fighting was reported. In the city of Kursk, an electrical substation was hit by a one-way drone, knocking out power in parts of the city. In the Belgorod region, frustration boiled over with residents and propagandists vocally criticizing the Kremlin and local officials. Propagandist Anastasia Kashevarova wrote, quote, "In Belgorod itself, not to mention the settlements closer to the border, it is extremely difficult to work. People employed in trade, services, catering, taxes, and others are in fact left without work. At the same time, there are no tax holidays and no deferments in mortgage and loan payments. People not only have to worry about their lives, but also to avoid penalties. In fact, the border area is a humanitarian disaster. We need to help organize the evacuation of people. Meanwhile, as far as we know, in Grivaran there is no electricity. People are without communication, without water. Shops and pharmacies are closed." Unquote. Belgorod region governor Vyacheslav Gladkov announced that roadblocks were being established at Kozinka, Glotova, Novostroyevka 1, Novostroyevka 2, Garapodol, Bizimina, where travel will be restricted. Schools are moving to remote learning, including within Belgorod, before students go on spring break next week. Gladkov also ordered the evacuation of 9,000 children. Fighting continued in parts of Kozinka, which is being heavily shelled by both combatants. 7 residents want to be evacuated by pro-Putin forces who can't reach the village. Another 20 have reportedly refused to leave. Ichkeria volunteers released another video showing they still hold Gorkovsky, including the village administrative building. The city of Belgorod was heavily shelled for the seventh day. To the south, the settlement of Razumna was shelled, wounding 4. There continues to be very little information about Shebekina, where fighting close to the Ukrainian border continues. Here is my theater-wide update. The Contact Group on Defense of Ukraine held its 20th meeting at the Ramstein U.S. Air Force Base in Germany. Numerous aid packages for Ukraine were announced. The EU Foreign Affairs spokesman Peter Stano said that by the end of March, Ukraine would receive almost 200,000 artillery shells, as promised in February, fulfilling half of the 1 million shell obligation. Another 500,000 shells are expected to arrive before December the 31st. Minister of Defense of Ukraine Rustem Umerov said, quote, "There will be more ammunition," and predicted that within the next 2 weeks, Ukrainian forces would have enough artillery rounds to support operations. Germany announced a $545 million military aid package that includes 100,000 artillery shells to be produced in Germany before the end of the year, 180,000 artillery shells for the Czech Republic initiative, and 10,000 155mm artillery rounds to be delivered immediately. The aid package also includes 1,000 infantry mobility vehicles and 100 trucks. Belgium announced it was providing enough funds to purchase 50,000 artillery shells for the Czech initiative. Yesterday's announced package includes 300 Evacolynx combat vehicles, armored ambulances, additional ammunition, and 3 Alkmaar-class minesweepers. Yesterday we reported there would be only one. Officially, we can confirm that at least 530,000 of the original 800,000 artillery shells the Czech Republic planned to buy for Ukraine have been funded. The number is almost certainly higher. Those munitions are expected to arrive in 2 to 3 months, with a target of June. Canada increased its funding for the Czech Ammunition Initiative from $20 million to $29 million. Ottawa also officially joined the drone initiative, co-led by Latvia and the United Kingdom. Finland also joined the Czech Ammunition Initiative, providing $33 million to purchase artillery shells. Kosovo will provide its first military aid package to Ukraine, which includes mortar shells and armored trucks. The US Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, only held Congress in session for 10 minutes. But it was enough time to allow 5 more people to sign Discharge Petition 9, bringing the count to 182 of the required 216. Discharge Petition 10, led by Brian Fitzpatrick, still had 14 signatures, 8 from Republicans and 6 from Democrats. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.